You hear the music. Hello, everybody. I'm Ed Robinson, and welcome to another exciting edition of At the Rim. This is the program that gets you caught up on anything and everything happening around the NBA, the National Basketball Association. Coming up on this edition of the program, we'll give you the scores from the NBA play-in tournament. Plus, we have an interview with Jackson Lloyd, host of the NBA Action with Jackson podcast and an NBA writer for Roll Call Sports. We asked Jackson about what's currently going on with the Minnesota Timberwolves. It's going to be an exciting show on this edition of At the Rim. I want to start off with my top three storylines. I want to start off with talking about the New Orleans Pelicans. Anytime that you're dealing with someone that has expressed mental or emotional concerns, I mean, a red flag or red flags are going to go up. And New Orleans has a lot of decisions to make during the offseason. Remember, this past, the last offseason, the Pelicans paid Zion Williamson that huge rookie Supermax extension contract. So Zion got a lot of money with that rookie Supermax deal. Matter of fact, it was this last offseason. Zion and Luka both got massive rookie Supermax extensions. And now Zion, again, continuing to have problems with his health, having problems with injuries, and then he's interviewed by the media, says physically he's fine, but he won't be ready to play again until he feels like he's Zion again. And then there's a lot of questions that I have to ask about this. Number one, are the Pelicans lighting a fire under Zion in terms of helping him to get back where he needs to be so he can be well conditioned, so he can be a wise investment to that franchise and vice versa? Are the Pelicans letting him just handle it and they're trusting him and his word and the people that are with Zion to be like, you know what, we're being a little, they're being laxed about this. And they just saying, okay, well, Zion, you know, do your thing, do what you want to do, you know, and we take your word for it. Or is it the Pelicans training staff? Are they the ones that are looking out for his best interests? Are they making sure that he's conditioned? Is he doing what he needs to do to get the job done and to be that awesome and to be that great player that he can be? A lot of questions to be answered in the offseason and even during pregame warmups before the Pelicans played the Oklahoma City Thunder. Zion was jumping. He was dunking. He was involved in the pregame warmups. He was he was posting up, hitting jump shots from a pregame. I know it's a pregame warmup, but he looked fine. You know, could he be played? Could he played maybe 20 minutes, 25 minutes in the game? Possibly. Would have it impacted the outcome of the game? Maybe. We'll never know that. But bottom line is this: New Orleans has got a lot to deal with in the off season, and certainly it didn't in the play-in game against the Oklahoma City Thunder. They got off to a great start in the first half. The third quarter, Oklahoma City just came in and took control of the situation. The Pelicans got hot early in the fourth quarter, but midway through the fourth quarter, Pelicans center Jonas Valanciunas got hurt, and he was off the court for a significant amount of time. And you saw the fellas from OKC, SGA, Shai Gilgeous-Alexander. You also saw Josh Giddey. You saw Lou Dort handle his business. You also saw Jalen Williams, the Jalen Williams that went to Santa Clara, and also the Jalen Williams that went to Arkansas. The proof was in the pudding, and certainly the Pels, their way, they couldn't find their way back into the game late in the fourth quarter. C.J. McCollum threw up enough bricks to build a house. It was just atrocious. And the Pelicans, again, I've said this before and I'll say it again, with Zion, they're 1 year away from playing in an NBA Finals. Without him, they're 2 to maybe 3 years away. Bottom line is, this is not looking good for Zion. This is not looking good for the New Orleans Pelicans that have made a financial investment and even an emotional investment into Zion. They've paid him this money, and now they basically gave him multiple keys to multiple cars. And I don't know what's going to happen if the organization needs to be forceful and to get him to not only being in solid shape, but to help him from having so many injuries. And when Zion Williamson, when I first saw him, I looked at him and was like, wow, he's an awesome player. If he goes to the NBA, he could be, he's like Charles Barkley. College and his playing, his NBA playing days, same build as Zion. But Zion is just Charles Barkley 5.0, in my opinion. But a lot of decisions to be made in the offseason, particularly with the New Orleans Pelicans, and Zion is definitely going to be at the top of that list. All right, my next storyline is going to be the Toronto Raptors. If you watch the game between the Thunder and the Pelicans were basically in control for much of that game until middle of the fourth quarter. They lost the lead. Oklahoma City took advantage of that situation, and they never looked back. Well, the Toronto Raptors, same thing, had a comfortable lead and were in control for much of this game. But when the fourth quarter happened, Chicago took over. Zach LaVine showed up, and he showed out in the big moments. DeMar DeRozan, I'll tell you one thing, DeMar coming back to Toronto, where he spent so many great seasons with them, you know, he said, like, hey, this is a homecoming, but guess what? This won't be a happy homecoming. This is going to be an uneventful homecoming. I tell you one thing, because I played for the other team, and DeMar showed up. He showed out, handled his business. Nikola Vucevic had a double-double in the game against the Toronto Raptors. Meanwhile, for the Raptors, they missed a lot of easy shots in this game. Fred VanVleet was consistent in this game. Pascal Siakam was consistent in this game. The problem was they just didn't have enough. I mean, Scottie Barnes did what he could do. Scottie's still very young in his career, but just a lot of missed shots from Toronto, very lazy, committing a lot of turnovers, and it was just was not good at all. Just was not a strong start, but a bad finish for the Raptors. And again, you can only get so much out of OG Anunoby. Again, defensively, led the league in steals during the regular season, but I mean, that's what you're going to get from him. He's solid on the offensive side, but just not enough. And Pascal and Fred, they did what they could do on the offensive side, but it fizzled out very quickly. And when you commit turnovers and when you miss shots, hey, somebody's going to take advantage of the opportunity. That's what Chicago did with DeMar DeRozan, Zach LaVine, and Nikola Vucevic. So the Toronto Raptors, similar to the New Orleans Pelicans in their play-in tournament games, they were in control for much of the game, but by the middle of the fourth quarter, they didn't have it anymore. And there's going to be a lot of questions in the offseason, not just for New Orleans, but also for Toronto as well. Remember, 4 years ago, they won the NBA championship. And if they want to try to get back to championship ways or at least get close to that moment, they're going to have to get some more firepower on the offensive side. And for my last storyline, it's going to be the Oklahoma City Thunder. The Oklahoma City Thunder finished this year's regular season with a record of 40-42. They qualified for the play-in tournament, had a come-from-behind victory over the New Orleans Pelicans to take on the Minnesota Timberwolves to determine who would get the 8th seed in the West. Unfortunately, they didn't win the game, but still, job well done this season from the Oklahoma City Thunder. Big ups to their general manager, Sam Presti, also their head coach, Mark Daigneault. Also, we have to give credit to how they were able to maneuver this team this year. You have to remember, 2 overall pick in this year's NBA draft, Chet Holmgren out of Gonzaga, didn't play this year, out for the season with a foot injury. But they got contributions from their other rookies that they drafted, Jalen Williams out of Santa Clara and the other Jalen Williams out of Arkansas. And then you really talk about the three gentlemen that really stepped up their game this year and came up huge, especially during the play-in tournament with the likes of Lu Dort, Josh Giddey, and of course, an emerging star, SGA Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, who made his first NBA All-Star team this year. So with all of those things considered, the future is extremely bright for the Oklahoma City Thunder. They have a young core. They're currently the second youngest team in the NBA. I mean, the best is yet to come for them. And then on top of that, you have Chet Holmgren that's going to be returning from his injury. He's going to be ready to go next season. The sky is definitely the limit for Oklahoma City. I mean, hey, let's face it. When you're in the Western Conference, every night is a dogfight. Every night is a playoff game. Every night is a championship game. So the future is looking bright for OKC. Lu Dort, Josh Giddey, Jalen Williams. Also, you've got Chet Holmgren, who's expected to make a full recovery and will be ready to go for the 2023-2024 season. And of course, in an emerging star that we saw, that the whole world got a chance to see, and that's SGA, Shai Gilgeous-Alexander. So with the Oklahoma City Thunder, we know the history of that organization with top-notch players such as Kevin Durant, Russell Westbrook, James Harden. Also, they had Chris Paul for a brief period of time, and also Paul George was there. But this is a new nucleus now. This is a young nucleus. Then, as I mentioned earlier, Lu Dort, Josh Giddey, Chet Holmgren expected to return from his injury for next season. Also, you got Jalen Williams and, of course, SGA, Shai Gilgeous-Alexander. The future is indeed bright in Oklahoma City. All right, when we come back from the break, we'll have your scores from the NBA play-in tournament. I'm Ed Robinson, and you're listening to At the Rim. All right, everybody, welcome back to the program. Now time for your scores from this year's play-in tournament. Let's start off in the Western Conference. What a thrilling game it was between the Los Angeles Lakers and the Minnesota Timberwolves. The game went into overtime, and the Lakers would pull through in overtime. Final score, 108-102. For the Lakers, LeBron James had a double-double with 30 points and 10 rebounds. Anthony Davis had a double-double with 24 points and 15 rebounds. Coming through in the clutch was Dennis Schroeder. He finished with 21 points. And on the losing end for the Timberwolves, Karl-Anthony Towns had a double-double with 24 points and 11 rebounds. And Mike Conley Jr. finished with 23 points. Once again, the final score in overtime, the Los Angeles Lakers 108, the Minnesota Timberwolves 102. So with the Lakers beating the Timberwolves, the Lakers were granted the seventh seed. With Minnesota being the loser, Minnesota would now play for the eighth seed and would face the winner out of the New Orleans and Oklahoma City game. And what a thrilling game that was down in the Crescent City between the Pelicans and the Thunder. Oklahoma City would come from behind to beat New Orleans 123-118. Thunder, Lu Dort had a sensational game. He finished with 27 points. Josh Giddey had a double-double with 31 points and 10 assists. And Shai Gilgeous-Alexander finished with 32 points. So the Oklahoma City Thunder again beat the New Orleans Pelicans 123-118. New Orleans eliminated from the play-in tournament, and we would decide the number eight seed in a game between the Minnesota Timberwolves and the Oklahoma City Thunder. And it was all Timberwolves. Minnesota would win 120-95. For the T-Wolves, Karl-Anthony Towns had a double-double with 28 points and 11 rebounds. Rudy Gobert had a double-double with 21 points and 10 rebounds. And Anthony Edwards had a double-double with 19 points and 10 rebounds. So again, Minnesota beats Oklahoma City 120-95. So Oklahoma City eliminated from the play-in tournament, and Minnesota grabs the number eight seed in the Western Conference. Let's move over now to the Eastern Conference, where we had the first play-in tournament game between the Miami Heat and the Atlanta Hawks. Atlanta would go on to win 116-105. Trae Young finished with 25 points. DeJounte Murray finished with 18 points. Sadiq Bey finished with 17 points. And Clint Capella finished with 21 rebounds. So with Atlanta beating Miami, Atlanta captured the number seven seed in the Eastern Conference. Miami losing this game would have an opportunity to play the winner out of the other play-in game between Toronto and Chicago to determine who they would play in to determine the eighth seed in the Eastern Conference. So we had the Toronto Raptors going up against the Chicago Bulls. Again, Toronto looked strong for much of the game, but Chicago had a fourth quarter for the ages, and they never looked back. Chicago would win 109-105. For the Bulls, Zach LaVine was sensational in this game. He finished with 39 points. DeMar DeRozan finished with 23 points. And Nikola Vucevic had a double-double with 14 points and 13 rebounds. So again, the finals, Chicago 109, Toronto 105. Toronto eliminated from the play-in tournament, and Chicago would go up against Miami to determine who would get the number 8 seed in the Eastern Conference. And that set the stage for Chicago and Miami. The Miami Heat would go on to win 102-91. For the Heat, Jimmy Butler, sensational, 31 points. But how about Max Strus? Max had a game for the ages as well. He finished with 31 points as well. So again, the final score, Miami 102, Chicago 91. So with Miami beating Chicago, the Bulls eliminated from the play-in tournament, Miami grabs the number 8 seed and will be in the playoffs. So that was this year's play-in tournament. There were some thrilling games. There were some games that were outstanding. And then there were some games that were just not outstanding, just pure dominance from start to finish. But hey, that puts a cap on the 2023 NBA play-in tournament. All right, when we come back from the break, I have an interview with Jackson Lloyd, host of the NBA Action with Jackson podcast, an NBA writer for Roll Call Sports. We talk about what's currently going on with the Minnesota Timberwolves. Jackson is coming up after the break. I'm Ed Robinson, and you're listening to At the Rim. All right, everybody, welcome back to the program. Let's welcome him back. He is the host of the NBA Action with Jackson podcast, and he's an NBA writer for Roll Call Sports, Jackson Lloyd. Hey, Jackson, welcome back to the program, my man.
Thanks for having me on again, Ed. I'm glad to be here.
You're welcome. Thank you so much once again for taking time out of your busy schedule to be with us on the program. I want to start off talking about head coach Chris Finch. He's been with the T-Wolves for really a short amount of time, but he's done a lot of great things so far since this is currently his third season with the T-Wolves. His first year with the team missed the playoffs, which was the year after the bubble. And then last year they wound up losing in the first round. But this year, success with the T-Wolves, and of course they're in the play-in tournament. Give me your thoughts on Coach Finch in his 2022-2023 season.
I've seen some mixed reviews and general criticism of Finch this season, and I do think that it's been a little disappointing from the Timberwolves this year just because we've never gotten to see them click. Even in stretches earlier in the season when they were healthier, it didn't quite come together. They started 16-21, hovered around 500 for the entire season. But I think that Finch has done a pretty good job, all things considered, this year. Cat missing 53 games. That's tough to keep the unit together, keep faith, keep pushing. Anthony Edwards making the All-Star team, Jaden McDaniels having the All-Defense case, and just kind of everything that they've had to work through and juggle to get to where they are. I'm pretty satisfied with Finch. He actually got the season. He became the second coach in franchise history. As sad as that sounds, a lot of coaches in Minnesota don't exactly have long tenures, and almost every single one goes out on a losing note. So I think Finch has done a pretty good job. I think this team, for all their struggles, I do think there's a scenario where they break through.
Rightfully so, and again, the talent is there. I mean, just the Western Conference alone is so talented with great teams and great superstar players, and if anybody that, as you said, Jackson, that has the cachet to really make things happen, it would be Chris Finch. And again, he's done some great things in such a short amount of time as being the head coach of the Minnesota Timberwolves. And speaking of a short amount of time, Mike Conley Jr., again, he was brought over in the trade deadline from the Utah Jazz. We know about those solid seasons that he had in Memphis and some great seasons that he had in Utah, but he comes over in the trade deadline from the Utah Jazz, and again, another typical Mike Conley year in terms of his stats, putting up points and doing what he needs to do to get the job done in terms of shooting and especially shooting from three-point range. Give me your thoughts on Conley arriving to the T-Wolves and what his contribution has been this season.
I think Conley's been solid for the Timberwolves. I thought that D'Lo played well for them, but I think the shift to Conley was more about D'Lo's contract situation as well as trying to acclimate and find a way to make Gobert fit as seamlessly as possible. I think that Rudy, Kyle Anderson, and Conley have shown great chemistry on the court. It's funny that I say that now given the little scuffle they had, but I think that the way Conley fits with the starters is pretty good for that fourth or fifth guy out there. I think that you have him alongside Jaden McDaniels, Anthony Edwards, Karl-Anthony Towns, and Rudy Gobert. That's a good starting unit. Then you can mix and match a bit with Torian Prince and Kyle Anderson. I think that for the most part, those seven guys, you can find winning combinations with them and find three-man duos or three-man lineups, two-man duos, et cetera, that fit together and empower each other and bring out the best, because there have been times this season where it looks like the Timberwolves have never played together. They're one of the worst teams in the league at valuing the basketball, turning it over, and then getting back in transition, playing transition defense. And those things are so interconnected that if you turn it over, your transition defense is going to be worse. If your transition defense is bad, there's almost no way that your defense is going to be good. So I think that Conley has been a steady in hand for the team. Again, I want to reemphasize, I think that D'Lo was good for the Timberwolves. I think he's a really good player. I think this shift was just more about what they want out of the point guard position. And then it was complicated by Russell's contract situation with him being a free agent. So pretty strong play throughout the entire year from the guard spot, in my opinion. But I definitely like the Conley fit based on what I've seen.
Yeah, I definitely agree with you on that one, Jackson. I think Conley brings a unique element to that team. As you stated earlier, just giving them more offense and giving them the veteran leadership that they need on that team. And, you know, somebody that we talk about, that we talked about veteran leadership with Mike Conley, was someone that's a part of the youth movement and someone that's continuing to be a rising star in the NBA, and that's Anthony Edwards. And only his third year in the league, man, we've seen improvements in scoring, also field goal percentage during this season. And Anthony Edwards, again, he's someone that's developing a resume that's must-see TV, made his first All-Star team this year. Give me your thoughts on Anthony and his play this year.
I think it's been an excellent season from Anthony Edwards. There's been some struggles along the way, but if you would have told me that Cat is going to miss three quarters of the season, and how that would impact Ant and the rest of the team, I would have been ecstatic if he said he made the All-Star team and they were above 500 with a chance to clinch a playoff spot. I know that that's not the lofty goals they had before the season. Many people, myself included, had them winning a playoff series. I actually had them making the conference finals and losing. But this has been a great year from Edwards. Just the strides we've seen since the middle of his rookie season to now, he's still got some areas to grow as a passer against double teams when he sees that extra added attention from the defense. But you can see the wheels turn, the lights starting to come on. And I know the last game against the Lakers was brutal, but with a more wide view, I am just so pleased with this season from Edwards. I think that with the franchise in his hands, it's in a great spot. A lot of teams should be envious of the position the Timberwolves are in. I know people have said they mortgaged their future in the Rudy trade, but I think they're in a great spot with Edwards and McDaniels, and obviously Karl-Anthony Towns too.
I want to stay just with Edwards for a moment. Again, I've talked about the youth movement in mentioning with Anthony Edwards. Where does Anthony rank, I should say, amongst the movement of current crop of players in the NBA in his age group with the likes of a Ja Morant and a Donovan Mitchell and Shai Gilgeous-Alexander? What do you see him amongst that crop of talent currently in the NBA?
Players are better right now, and I don't know if this is a hot take or not, though. I do think that he will surpass all of them someday. It's easy to forget, given how much is going on in the NBA now, but this is Anthony Edwards' third season, and he's only 21 years old. he's younger than Evan Mobley, if I'm not mistaken. And again, the progress we've seen from him and then the peers he's being compared to. Donovan Mitchell came into the league in 2017. SGA came in 2018. So these are guys that are multiple years ahead in their developmental curve. And while Ant is not quite to that level yet, he's right there. I think next season, I think he makes the All-NBA team next season. And then within 3 years after that, I expect him to be a yearly MVP candidate. One of the top 3 to 5 best players in the league. That's how high I am on Edwards.
Yeah, he definitely has the potential, Jackson. And certainly you could put him up there with those gentlemen that we talked about earlier. And certainly, as they say, the star continues to get to rise high for Anthony Edwards. And speaking of Anthony Edwards, you mentioned the other gentleman's name earlier, Karl Anthony Towns. You talk about the nucleus and the potential, how high the team can go in terms of the talent that they have. Karl Anthony Towns, again, one of the best shooting big men in the NBA, really one of the best two-way players in the league, but he's had his difficulties this year battling a lot of injuries. Give me your thoughts on Cat in his regular season.
I think that since Cat came back, he's been tremendous. It's tough whenever you miss 3 or 4 months, 53 games, just to get your conditioning and stamina up to where it needs to be and then get back in your rhythm as a player, get reacclimated into the rotation and hit your stride simultaneously with the team in the midst of a playoff mix. But I think he's been great. He's making quick decisions. I feel like he's had less bonehead offensive fouls where he charges into the defender. And I think that we're seeing gradually, maybe slower than many would like, but we're seeing signs of growth from Karl Anthony Towns. In previous years, I think that officiating has gotten to him, and over the years, officiating has got to him and impacted how he's performed throughout the game, especially if he picks up 3, 4, 5 fouls. This season, very pleased with Cat. I think that if he can ever get to a stretch where he's playing 30, 40, 50 consecutive games in a row again, people are going to see the talent he is, because for the first 3, 4, 5 years of his career, he was an Iron Man. Then some bad luck, untimely injuries, personal tragedies, whole world going through a pandemic, all that stuff kind of combined together and made just a brutal cocktail for him. But great season from him. I hope we see an extended stretch of health, and I'm just excited to watch it all play out.
We talked about Anthony Edwards being a franchise player for the Timberwolves. Does Carl enjoy playing, being in Minnesota, and where do you see him going forward? Do you see him continuing to be one of the franchise players for the Timberwolves, or do you see him maybe exiting maybe down the line if they can't get the right personnel to help him win a championship or get to that next level?
I'm not sure, to be honest. It's hard to know how each player is thinking and feels about a particular situation. There's been instances where a player requests a trade where I've been blindsided by it. And then there's situations where you think a player should request a trade and they never do because of their comfort and kind of attachment to a city or team. I think that last season was kind of a danger zone for the Timberwolves if they didn't have some signs of improvement. They started 4-9 and it was just the sky is falling, going downhill. But they ultimately turned it around, won the play-in game versus the Clippers, and put up a fight. In a very interesting series in the first round against the Memphis Grizzlies. I think that kind of showcased an outline and blueprint for what the team can be if they iron out the wrinkles with the turnovers, decision-making, late-game execution. So after last season, I think that kicked the can down the road for Towns. How he's feeling right now, I'm not sure. This season has definitely been just on the more disappointing side from a results-based standpoint, but I think the Timberwolves are in a great spot with or without Towns, to be honest, because if they did trade him, while his value wouldn't be as high as some of the other recent superstars we've seen traded, like Anthony Davis, Paul George, James Harden, et cetera, he's still an all-league player, multi-time all-star. While he's not one of the best 5 or 10 players in the league, he can be one of your cornerstones. So the only question mark with Cat, really, is the inconsistent and unsteady health. And some of that is, I think, just bad luck, because it's not like these injuries are related or compounding with each other. They're just, it's just stuff that happens, like the arm injury. Then he has the cast soft tissue injury this year. It's really tricky, but either way, I like where the team is. I like how Towns is playing, but it's just difficult to kind of gauge how everyone is feeling about a given situation with so much going on in the inside that I'm obviously not proxy to.
Understood. And hopefully, again, you know, Karl Anthony Towns is a great talent. Hopefully he can stick around, you know, in the future for Minnesota, what they can build on with him and Anthony Edwards. And speaking of trying to build on something, give us more of an insight, specifically what happened. Rudy Gobert, we know Rudy was traded in the offseason to the Minnesota Timberwolves, coming over from the Utah Jazz. And we know he's one of the best defenders in the league. He's won the Defensive Player of the Year multiple times. Kyle Anderson was a guy that was very vital to the success of the Memphis Grizzlies in terms of getting to the playoffs, being a quality bench player. Well, let's just say Rudy and Kyle got into some fisticuffs final day of the regular season when the Timberwolves faced the New Orleans Pelicans. I got to ask you this, Jackson, because I know you're much closer to the situation, being in Minnesota and covering the team quite often. What was the situation behind these two going at it, and what has happened in the aftermath of this in terms of team bonding and chemistry and Rudy and Kyle trying to get back what they once had as teammates?
I think that it was just typical disappointment or being upset with the teammate for not executing to the level that you'd like, because everything is interconnected defensively. One weak chain breaks the whole link. And I think that was just a kind of snapshot in the moment. Two guys in a big game, because this game was the difference between the Pelicans and Timberwolves, the difference between the 8th seed and the 9th seed for the Timberwolves. They actually could have gone up to 7 if a couple games played out differently. But in short, it was 8th seed or 9th seed if they won or lost this game. So big game, more or less a playoff game to some extent. You have to win 2 out of 3 either way based on how their placement in the standings is, excuse me. So that's huge. That adds to the intensity and kind of just stature of the scenario. I don't think it's something that'll hang with them long term. I think they're professionals. I think that even if they did have some issue with one another, it's not something that would continue to bleed into the team itself. Now, some of that stuff, if it were an issue, not saying it is, it might show up on the court chemistry-wise, but as I mentioned earlier, I think those two play really well together with some of the high-low passing from Anderson. Anderson's given him some lobs. Anderson plays a ton of the power forward spot. So those two players, I'm not worried about them in particular. I think the Timberwolves core as a whole is good. I think they just need to play for a sustained period together and see where the chips fall. If you lose, you lose. But you want to evaluate the team holistically and kind of put each player in the role you envision them in before you get too caught up in these guys don't fit or these guys don't get along. I think it's something you have to, you know, run off the ground ball the season. Then once we get to the draft, free agency, et cetera, see what other teams are doing on the open market, you can evaluate it. But for now, I'm not too concerned with the situation. Again, I'm not on the inside necessarily, but just my view of watching the team night in and night out and what I know of these two players, I think that both are in some leadership role in some capacity with the team. So I think that it's something that'll be squashed and figured out. I think the biggest issue with it was that it was on TV. If it happened at a practice, I think it would be swept under the rug with almost no mention.
So we had the situation that came about with Gobert and Anderson. Jaden McDaniels, he had a bout of frustration and anger as well, punching the wall because of things weren't going well at that particular time for the T-Wolves. What's the latest on Jaden, and what's his recovery going to be like moving forward?
It's just so unfortunate. I feel really bad for Jaden McDaniels. Apparently he thought that the wall that he hit was just a tarp, and then there ended up being a sheet of concrete, the wall beyond it. So that's bad luck. Obviously, know the situation, know your importance to the team, but I definitely feel for him. I saw on Twitter, I can't remember who made the tweet, but Marvin Bagley had a similar injury, I want to say last season, and he missed 54 days. So if that Daniels, his season is effectively over, unless the Timberwolves made the finals and he'd be able to return at some point. So I'm viewing or treating McDaniels as done for the season, essentially a non-factor moving forward, which is so disappointing because he was playing at an all-league level defensively, and he was giving us the breadcrumbs and kind of flashes offensively, making one and two dribble pull-ups, making plays as a driver, finishing at the rim with power and force. And we were kind of seeing, not the total package necessarily, but we were seeing exactly what his skill set is on the defensive end. And then he was saying, like, oh, here's X, Y, and Z that I can do offensively, and I'm a perfect fit with Karl-Anthony Towns. I'm a perfect fit with Anthony Edwards. Just brutal timing, and I think that it's something that he'll learn from and be better because of it.
Yeah, I hope so, because, I mean, Jaden has developed a reputation of being a solid defender, and I know the T-Wolves going forward can't lose him to certainly injuries or any silly stuff happening, so they're definitely going to need him going forward, however a long amount of time he is in Minnesota. You heard it from him. He's Jackson Lloyd. He is the host of the NBA Action with Jackson podcast and also an NBA writer for Roll Call Sports. Jackson, again, thank you so much for taking time out of your busy schedule to be with us on the program. Just tell everybody what's going on with the NBA Action with Jackson podcast and also with Roll Call Sports.
So my content creation is kind of in flux right now due to some just focusing on school and working a lot, just personal life stuff, but you can follow me on Twitter at Jackson Lloyd NBA. Eventually, I'll start pumping out more NBA Action with Jackson podcast, and I do write on occasion for Roll Call Sports. But follow me on Twitter. That's where you'll find everything I do. And thank you so much, Ed, for having me on. I love coming on anytime.
You're welcome. I thank you again for taking time out of your busy schedule to be on the program. So one more time, Jackson, tell everybody where they can find you on social media, as well as the NBA Action with Jackson podcast, Roll Call Sports, and any websites. Let the listeners know that as well.
So my Twitter is at Jackson Lloyd NBA, and then the podcast name on Twitter is at NBA Action Pod. And it's been about a year since I've done the pod, but those are the two areas where you'll find me and see what I'm putting out, everything I'm working on. I'm always talking basketball on Twitter. It's my biggest hobby. What can I say?
All right, you got that, and you heard it from him. He is Jackson Lloyd. He is the host of the NBA Action with Jackson podcast. Also, he is an NBA writer for Roll Call Sports. Check him out. Jackson, again, thank you so much, my man. If ever you want to come back on, just feel free to let us know.
Thank you so much, Ed.
You're welcome. We'll be back with more. All right, everybody, welcome back to the program. Before we get on out of here, let's give you your first round NBA playoff matchups. Let's start off in the Eastern Conference, where we're going to have a thrilling first round matchup between the number one seed Milwaukee Bucks and the 8 seed Miami Heat. Then we've got a thrilling one. I think this is going to be the show stealer in the first round. We've got the 4th seed Cleveland Cavaliers going up against the 5th seed New York Knicks. Then we have the 3rd seed Philadelphia 76ers going up against the 6th seed Brooklyn Nets. And then we have the number 2 seed Boston Celtics going up against the 7th seed Atlanta Hawks. Let's move over now to the Western Conference. We have the number 1 seed Denver Nuggets going up against the 8th seed Minnesota Timberwolves. The 4th seed Phoenix Suns will go up against the 5th seed Los Angeles Clippers. We have the 3rd seed Sacramento Kings going up against the 6th seed Golden State Warriors. We have the number 2 seed Memphis Grizzlies going up against the Los Angeles Lakers. Now, I said that the Cleveland and New York series, I think, is going to be the show stealer in the first round. But, man, these Western Conference Finals series, you can look at any of these matchups, Denver and Minnesota, Phoenix and the Clippers, Sacramento and Golden State, Memphis and the L.A. Lakers. These matchups could easily be a Western Conference Finals matchup. It's the Western Conference. It's the Wild Wild West. So it's been like that for so long now, man. It's just so competitive in the West. So many great teams and so many great players. Well, that's going to do it for another exciting edition of At the Rim. Once again, a big special thank you to Jackson Lloyd, host of the NBA Action with Jackson podcast and NBA writer for Roll Call Sports. And until next time, everybody, I'm Ed Robinson saying so long, and you've been listening to At the Rim.